The 10K Collective, our sister podcast, is the world's newest e-commerce podcast, now live on Apple Podcasts and on Stitcher. It's for 6, 7, and 8-figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers. It's highly actionable, but it's focused on how to scale your business for sale or long-term profit, not short-term hacks. We have deep talks with real e-commerce sellers and experts in industries like sourcing, team building, and managing cash. Search your podcast app for 10K Collective or go to 10kcollective.com for show notes or to listen online. That's 10K for kilo, collective.com, 10kcollective.com.
I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Hello, ladles and jelly spoons. Welcome to Amazing FBA. This is your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome back to the show. Today, we are talking mindset as part of a, not even a series, but a whole section of the podcast devoted to this topic, because I just think it's so critical, particularly for people who are in the earliest phases of their journey in creating an Amazon-based business, an e-commerce business, or for that matter, any business, really. But particularly, it was based online because there's a lot of isolation that goes with that. And a great deal of self-awareness, self-searching, and self-discipline is needed compared to the sort of usual activities in an office where you can probably get away with, you know, being very unproactive and get somewhere because you're surrounded by people making you do stuff all day. That is not the case when you're self-employed to start with. And every small business person starts off as self-employed before they employ others. So one of the things we are looking at today is time management, or the main thing we're looking at. These insights are from the book, Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It's been around for about a generation or two, since about the early 80s, roughly. I came across it in the 90s, I think. So I've been reading it on and off for about 20 years. And I have to say, has it made me rich? No book makes you rich if you don't implement it. But so far as I have had any successes, I look back on this book and realize I have followed what it says. And insofar as things don't go well, it's because I'm drifting away from the principles in this book. I think it's an excellent book, very, very strong set of principles for living, if you like. This sounds a bit over the top. I don't think it matters. Excellent, certainly for business. And he did a lot of work with businesses and coaching businesses and improving businesses in his lifetime. So very much worth checking out. For the other episodes based around this book, go to episode 283 for Inside Out, which is the one basic paradigm, which is Covey's favorite word for patterns of looking at things, really a lens through which you look at the world and life, really. And Inside Out, very, very important, really the idea that the way we see the problem is the problem. That's the summary of it. That's episode 283. Habit 1, be proactive. In other words, you take responsibility for deciding what your life is and what it's about. And if you don't like how it is, change it. If you don't like your habits of thought, change those as well. And that's a very powerful and very important basic precursor to everything else. And that's episode 284. Habit 2, begin with the end in mind. It's episode 298, which is basically about having a vision, having a clear goal. Bigger than a goal, I think. Like, what do you want your life to be about? What do you want your work to be about? And equally, what do you want your business to be about? And that's, I think, a very important question that a lot of people kind of skimp over when it comes to creating their own business. So having done all of that, then we come to habit 3. And by the way, if you want to get show notes from this episode, go to amazingfba.com/324, episode 324. This is the episode we're in. And that's where you'll find the detailed notes, quite a lot of quotes from the Covey book, Habit 3, Put First Things First, which is basically after the habit of proactivity. In other words, you know, creating your own life and your own ways of doing things and seeing things, and then having a vision. It's, okay, how do I implement that vision? So daily and weekly time management, task management, those kinds of words really kind of sum it up. So to start with then, one question Covey puts to us at the beginning of this part of the book is a really critical and excellent question, which is this: what one thing could you do, something you aren't doing now, that if you did it on a regular basis would make a tremendous positive difference in your life, in your work life, shall we say, for the purposes of this? What one thing Could you do something you're not doing now that, if you did it on a regular basis, would make a tremendous positive difference in your work life? Really excellent question. By the way, very similar to the One Thing book and the question that is asked in that. It's not quite the same thing. What I like about Covey is that there's an overall philosophy of life based on a great deal of reviews of success literature, if you like. So to be taken with a pinch of salt, like anything else. Like I say, the reason that I'm coming back to this and doing an episode about this for business is because I find it isn't just theory. I think it's an excellent framework that really relates very strongly to those people who do well in business, and equally the absence of it relates to my failures or things that haven't gone as well as they can, and also the clients I've worked with who have struggled. So I think it's quite an accurate representation of good habits of entrepreneurs for that reason that I dare to bring it up in an otherwise business-like podcast. So very, very good question. There's one thing to know what you should be doing. The other thing then, of course, is to actually do it, right? So what is habit three? Habit three is the personal fruit, the practical fulfillment of habits one and two. So habit one, which is be proactive, says you're the creator, you are in charge. And there is no more important thought, I think, than that for an entrepreneur. Habit one is based on the four unique human endowments, as Covey puts it, of imagination, conscience, will, and self-awareness. So if you lack imagination, if you lack conscience, you're going to be a monster. You might make money, but you will cause a lot of harm. If you lack will, you're never going to do anything. If you're not self-aware, which is another thing that is less prevalent, perhaps, amongst entrepreneurs, you're going to become a monster as well, I think, eventually. So those are all important things. Habit two then comes after that, which is the first, or the mental creation based on imagination, the ability to create with our minds what we cannot see yet with our eyes, which is really, really important for people in the early stages of business building, where you don't yet have any kind of concrete proof that you've got anything real going. It just exists in your imagination. There's also conscience, your own personal moral kind of guidelines as well. Habit three then is the second creation, the physical creation. And that's the fulfillment, the natural emergence of habits one and two. The exercise of independent will is the day-to-day, moment-by-moment doing. However, having said that, habit one and two are absolutely essential and a prerequisite to habit three. Habit one, the be proactive, you can't be principle-centered without being aware of and developing your own proactive nature. In other words, if you think you're just at the mercy of your life, you're never going to start a business. Oh, I can't. I haven't got enough time. I don't have enough money. My family's too busy. My wife won't let me. Whatever other excuses people make for themselves. Understandable individually, but taken together, they lead to a life of being reactive to other people and circumstances rather than deciding what's important and just getting on with it. To put it very simply, this is more Michael Visa than Stephen Covey, by the way. Stephen Covey says you can't become principle-centered without being aware of your paradigms, understanding how to shift them, and how to align them with principles. So that's all the habit one stuff. So go back and listen to that episode. But just to summarize it, paradigms is his fancy word for the way you look at things, the patterns of behavior, patterns of thinking. So you need to become aware of those, understand how to shift them and align them with principles. For example, honesty, integrity, acting as you speak and speaking as you act, for example, that kind of thing, right? And it sounds like, on the one hand, if you're feeling cynical in reaction to this, I hear you. It sounds like one of those things that people say that's easy to say, but hard to do, or just blindingly obvious. And both of those may be true, but that doesn't mean it's not accurate. I think a lot of people, for example, have limiting beliefs around money, and that definitely includes me. And that's something we have to just work hard to deconstruct, because you're never going to get rich. For example, if you believe that rich people are sons of bees, or, you know, nasty swear words, horrible people, why on earth would you be comfortable with getting rich? And the answer is you're not going to be. You're going to unconsciously sabotage yourself. So I'm not going to get into that in great depth here, but just suffice it to say that really is critical. And limiting beliefs come even amongst very aware people, very high achievers in the 10K Collective Mastermind, people who are doing things like building from scratch in 2 years, a business that does £500,000 a year and it is on track to do $1 million. That kind of person still has limiting beliefs about, for example, the worth of their business they built, their ability to build a £10 million business or a £100 million business. At any level, you can find limiting beliefs and you need to find ways to shift them. So I can't stress enough how true I've found that to be. So that's habit one. That's a precursor to habit three. Habit two is you can't become principle-centered without a vision of and a focus on the unique contribution that is yours to make. And again, that really is so important on the company or business-wide level. You can't become a really serious business, I think, without a vision of what your business can contribute. Jim Collins, in one of his books, I think it's Good to Great, says, well, if you've got a really great company, you'll know it, because if your business disappeared from the landscape, there would be a hole. People would miss it. There would be something missing that was there before. So that's an incredibly important thing to think about for you personally, for your life, and your business fits into your life, I believe, not the other way around. I don't believe in trashing your entire relationships and your health on the altar of business success. Many people have done that and mostly live to regret it, even famously people like Steve Jobs at the end of his life. But for your business as well, you've got to have an idea of what is the vision, what is the unique contribution that your business is going to make to the world. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying you should spend hours of your life spending thinking too much about this without taking action if you have no business yet. But as you develop, if you develop a real business and it gets into action and starts to run day to day without so much of your input, I think it's absolutely critical at that stage to think about what your business really represents to the planet. If it's just somebody else just selling widgets from China because they're cheap, guess what? There's not much future to that business, in my humble opinion. So then we've got habits one and two. Precede habit three. I'm spending quite a bit of time recapping those because I just think it's absolutely critical that you are a person that's self-aware and try to shift limiting beliefs and see the world in a helpful way and be proactive, not reactive. That's critical. You've also got to have a vision and you've got to refine both of those things. I think every day you've got to realign yourself with your vision. You've got to remind yourself if you don't like how things are in your business, in your industry, in your life, that's up to you to do what you can to change it. I mean, there's some things out of your control, just let go of those. Focus on the things that are in your control. And Covey talks about a circle of concern, circle of influence. Very important to revisit that as well in habit one. So then habit three, first things first, daily action. How does that work? With the foundation of habits one and two, you can become principle-centered by practicing effective self-management. Then the ability to manage well determines the quality and even existence of the second creation, as Covey calls it. In other words, making your vision real, making it physical, making money, apart from anything else. Management, he says, is the analysis, the sequencing, the time-bound left brain aspects of effective self-government. And Covey's simple summary is this: manage from the left, lead from the right. In other words, he's talking about the traditional division or the division that was very popular in the 70s and 80s between the left and right hemispheres of the brain. In fact, recent neuroscience, I understand, has said this is a little bit simplistic, but it's not a bad metaphor. It doesn't matter if it's physically true or not. It's a way of looking at things that is helpful. So left brain is about sequencing, logical, analytical thinking. Right brain is holistic, perhaps more emotional, and that's where he says you lead from. And I think that just makes a lot of sense to me. And you'll find within your businesses as well, if you have business partners or a team, that some people are more visionary and not so good with details. And some people are great with details, but need that sense of direction and leadership from somebody else. Very common. And good business partnerships often work by combining people who tend to focus on one or the other. For example, Steve Jobs, when he got back to Apple after he was kicked out, famously Apple grew very well and then went backwards for years. And then Steve Jobs came back on board. One of the first things he did was hire Tim Cook, the current CEO, because Jobs was and knew he was a visionary and a creative person, but he knew that he didn't have a strength in supply chain management and the nuts and bolts to make the mechanics and the economics of Apple work. So he hired Tim Cook, who is an expert in supply chain management. And it's also interesting, just as a side note, to reflect, okay, now that Steve Jobs is gone and Tim Cook is an expert in that area and is running Apple, how much longer will it keep going? How successful will it be as a creative company? Quite invested in that question because I have a MacBook and I've had one for 10 years and I've got an iPhone as well. So I was a personal user of Mac products. We will see, insofar that they're good at making money right now, are they good at creativity and vision and long-term thinking? Let's see how that goes out. So back to Covey's book then, The Power of Independent Will. It is, as he says, independent will that really makes effective self-management possible. And it's not usually the dramatic once-in-a-lifetime effort that brings enduring success. Empowerment, says Covey, comes from learning how to use this great endowment in the decisions we make every day. Effective management is putting first things first. Whilst leadership decides what first things are, it's management that puts them first day by day, moment by moment. Management is discipline, carrying it out. And that's absolutely true. And one of the great problems that we all fall into as digital-based entrepreneurs is that we have several things against us. First of all, if you don't have any business yet and you're just starting out doing research, working on your own, you're isolated and you don't have any physical proof whatsoever that anything works yet because you don't have any turnover, you don't even have products, you don't have customers, and you don't have the social interaction with a colleague or a boss or even your business partner if you're working virtually or if you don't have a business partner. And that's a terrible problem. So I do think at that stage of the game is absolutely critical. I think at all stages of the game, you benefit. But at that stage, it's critical to find somebody you can work with. Isolation is a dream killer. And I think it's Barbara Sher who said that. And I cannot say how strongly I think that's true. Even really experienced Amazon entrepreneurs who spend too much time behind their computers get miserable. I know a few of them and they're doing very well. They're making millions a year sometimes, but they're still not happy if they're not interacting with other people. So never forget that. If in doubt, connect. Isolation is a dream killer. So the solution is connection. It's connection to the right people being the only caveat. If you listen to too many podcasts, join too many random Facebook groups, I mean, obviously you're welcome to listen to this. And I hope I'm trying to help you. And the Facebook group, by the way, is also a place that you can go and get some questions answered if you have them. AmazingFBA.com/FB. F as in face, B as in book. Having said that, though, if you are really struggling, I would suggest you need to get yourself a good coach. If you think I could be that person, I'd be delighted to discuss that with you. I'm not going to do a heavy sales pitch. I've got limited time. But most importantly, I refuse to work with somebody if I don't think I can get them return on investment. I can't promise that you're going to get it if you don't do the work, but I do my best to pick people who are going to benefit. So if I turn you away, don't take it personally. It's because I want to make sure I don't waste your time and money. So if you want to explore that, amazingfba.com/mentoring, M-E-N-T-O-R-I-N-G. So back to the independent will. It's absolutely critical that you carry stuff out every day. It's very hard to be accountable to yourself only. That's the only caveat I would make. So since we're talking about time management in some ways, or at least what's traditionally called time management, Covey talks about four generations of time management. Generation one is checklists, notes. Everybody has those, I guess. We all use those. And it's very traditional to sit there with a list. We've all done it. I've done it recently sometimes where you make an undifferentiated list of 15 things and try and get through as many of those as you can for the day. Somewhat depressing, I normally find, because you can often find either you nearly always, I make a list for the day. It's ludicrous. I'm so ambitious about how much I can achieve for the day. Maybe it's just me that I'm not the only person. I think from experience that does something like that. The one alternative is that instead of not doing most of it, you get it done and you still don't feel like your business has moved forward when you look back over the week, the month, the year. That's really depressing. So that's not enough in itself. Generation two, says Covey, is calendars and appointments. Obviously, putting things in the calendar makes it much more likely that it's going to happen. Again, caveat, much more likely if somebody else is involved. If you've got to have a call with a business partner or a coach or an online coaching community, I just think you're more likely to turn up than if it's just an appointment with yourself. Those are hard appointments to keep, in my experience, right? And then generation three, whole bunch more advanced than that. Prioritization is included in that. In other words, some things are more important than others. Clarifying values as well, what's really important, what is less important. And then goal setting as well, long, intermediate and short-term targets, which are in harmony with values. And it also includes the concept of daily planning around those goals of the greatest worth. That sounds great. So how come that isn't enough? A lot of us would be pleased to get to that point where we schedule everything rigidly. But guess what? As Covey says, while the third generation has made a significant contribution, people have begun to realize that efficient scheduling and control of time are often counterproductive. The efficiency focus creates expectations that clash with rich relationships, human needs, and spontaneous moments. As a result, many people have become turned off by the time management programs and planners. And that's really very true. I mean, I've gone through phases like I think most people have themselves of trying just about everything. There's Dave Allen's Getting Things Done book. There's Managing Free Creative People, a book that's actually quite an interesting book that I may do a review on at some point, which is not very famous. The Non-BS series from Dan Kennedy, who I quite like because he is a no-BS person and an entrepreneur himself and a great marketer. But in the end, all these approaches were just a bit too rigid for me. And tend to shy away from them. So we need a different way of doing things, which we'll come to later. First of all, let's look at another very basic concept, which is still very, very helpful, which is the time management matrix. I believe originally created by or popularized by Eisenhower, who was, of course, a hyper successful man in the sense that he was a general for the United States in the Second World War. And then, of course, the president as well, Ike, as he was called. So very great person to learn from. The two factors in this time management matrix, which is a 2x2 matrix. So, four quadrants, four little squares within a bigger square or rectangle. The two factors that define an activity are urgent and important. So if you imagine a 2x2 grid and you've got important across the top and urgent at the left-hand column of the two columns, and then important is the top of two rows, right? If you want to write it on a piece of paper. Urgent means it requires immediate action. And urgent things, by the way, act upon us. So we react to them. Whereas important things, on the other hand, have to do with results. It contributes to your mission, your values, your high priority goals. And those are things that we have to be much more proactive to achieve. In other words, we need to make a conscious decision and stick to it in the face of other pressures. If we react to urgent matters, but important matters do not require that urgency, they require more initiative. If we don't have a clear idea of what is important, of the results we desire in our lives, we are easily diverted into responding to the urgent. I think that's absolutely critical. I find that so true. If I don't have a clear mission that I'm on and reconnect with that mission, and I mean emotionally connect and in sort of general feelings, even physically energize myself, then it's no good. It's just not going to happen. You're going to find that other things push you around. And that's, again, so much the pattern that I see with clients or people who reach out to me, that they make intentions. The road to hell, as they say, is paved with good intentions. That could have been written for the would-be entrepreneur, right? Myself included, many times. So I'm not being holier than thou about this. I mean, there are many people that are more proactive than me, but I managed to keep myself in action by having a business coach, by having communities, by being accountable to my clients, by being accountable to the customers who buy Amazon products, etc., etc. In other words, getting into motion is hard. Staying in motion is easier. But I just think the most important thing in the world is to make a decision about what is important to you and to stick to that like glue. You may actually change your mind later on about what's important. But if you don't stick to it for a certain amount of time, enough to get some progress or at least test the idea, then you're not going to get anywhere. And there's another phrase that springs to mind. It's strong convictions lightly held is perfect for business. So in other words, for 6 months, a year, 2 years, whatever time period you give it, you need to be very one track about getting your business off the ground. With the understanding as well that if something doesn't work, you give it a certain time period or a certain amount of money. And Seth Godin talks about this. Is look, it doesn't matter whether you give it a year or 10 years or 6 months, whether it's $1,000 or $1 million or $10 million. Give it that amount of time and or money. And once you've done that, stop and reevaluate. And if it's not working, just kill it. As another famous person's Kevin, the guy from Dragon's Den and Shark Tank, his name escapes me, Mr. Wonderful, says, if your business isn't making a profit by year three, take it behind the shed and shoot it in his usual abrupt manner. I wish I could remember a second name. Sorry, Kevin. But you get the idea. So I think there is something in that. So it's very, very difficult that, because on the one hand, you have to commit very, very strongly. And on the other hand, you need to be willing to let go. I think what kills people is that halfway house. If you have doubts during your 6 month period or your 1 year period, if you're not committed, you're never going to get anywhere, guaranteed. On the other hand, if you commit to something for 4 years and it's not making any profits, you're probably just denying reality as well. So very tricky in a way, that thing. But I would say you can square that circle very simply. Just be very, very committed to a medium term goal. Give yourself 6 months or a year, go like crazy at it, and then review. And if it looks like it's not producing any results, you'll know. You'll probably want to give up anyway, so you will. But what I would say is don't give up, you know, after 3 months or something where things aren't working, because it takes about a year to get most private label businesses off the ground, in between day jobs and doing your back and forth with China, Chinese New Year, things that work perfectly, etc., etc., right? You certainly can do it quicker than that, for sure. But if you go in with the expectation that you need to tough it out for a year, then, and put things in place, community of people, like preferably a physical community, get some training, have a coach, you're going to be much more likely to succeed than if you just drift along for a bit and then give up when nothing's happening. I mean, of course, nothing's happening to start with. You haven't done anything yet. You know, coming back to the time management matrix. So I went off on one there, except what I'm trying to do really is put across Stephen Covey's ideas and link them as intimately as I can to the business we're in. And I'm trying to get started with an e-commerce business in many cases, or in some cases, trying to expand an existing e-commerce business. So the time management matrix consists of four quadrants, or four little squares within a big one. Quadrant one is urgent and important. It deals with significant results that require immediate attention. And we usually call the things there crises or problems. Well, crisis is probably a good word for it. We all have some crises in our lives, but quadrant one consumes many people. They are the crisis managers, problem-minded people, and deadline-driven producers. And as long as you focus on quadrant one, it keeps getting bigger and bigger until it dominates you. And I am often guilty of this kind of thing. I mean, if it's going to be tax, for example, I often do it near the deadline. I'm not the only one. I know that, whether it's corporate tax, my own personal tax returns. If I have to produce a podcast, then I do it when the deadline's coming up sometimes, which is very poor, but that's at least I'm getting it done because I've got a framework. But nevertheless, I mean, one of the things I suppose, like in my defense, I get the podcast done because I believe it's part of my mission to help educate people and to spread the ability to have independent, wealthy lives. And that is something I believe in, and trying to live that life and to help other people to live it. That was a proactive thing to start the podcast. But then I, in a way, I have the luxury of being reactive because now I have an audience I'm accountable to. So once again, a win for accountability, right? Quadrant three, urgent but not important. There are other people who spend a lot of time in urgent, not important ones in quadrant three, thinking they're in quadrant one. In other words, they think things are urgent, therefore they're important. They're not the same, right? Reality is the urgency of matters is often based on the priorities and expectations of others. So somebody might think it's very important that you answer their email asking how to, you know, make some money with something, or to solve a problem or customer service problem, or to complain about something and that you respond, or to invoice you for some services they provided you. And I'm not saying you shouldn't respond to those things, but if all you do is respond to those things, or you do them first in the day, you're in trouble. And checking email first thing in the morning is the classic bad habit with that. I mean, that's something that Tim Ferriss was very big on in the 4-Hour Workweek. Another excellent book, but just a different take on a lot of the same topics, really, but quite a lot of similar conclusions. The classic thing would be, do not start your day with email. That's easier to do for all of us. But one of the other things is, do not start your day by checking Facebook, which I actually did today. I very rarely do that, to be fair to myself. It put me in a terrible mood because I could see people that I thought were mediocre succeeding. People were going on about politics that I disagreed with. And the rest of it was just kind of largely a waste of time, or people showing how rich they were. And you know, why am I feeling like I'm not succeeding like that? It's just a terrible idea. So that's even worse. Quadrant four is non-urgent and not important. People who spend a lot of time exclusively in quadrants three, that's the urgent but not important. And quadrant four, neither important nor urgent, lead irresponsible lives. Effective people stay out of quadrants three and four because, urgent or not, they are not important. They also shrink quadrant one down to size by spending more time in quadrant two. In other words, being proactive. We'll talk about that in a second. But one of the things I want to talk about is why we end up in quadrant four. Why was I checking Facebook? Why do I end up watching YouTube videos when I could be working? Why do I end up goofing off or going for a snooze when I should be working? Well, that's because we feel overwhelmed. And I think a lot of the time we feel overwhelmed, it's because we are allowing the size of a task to seem too big in our minds. And instead of that, we need to think about this habit one, which is being proactive. If we have a way of thinking that's not serving us, we need to change that. And one of the ways we need to change is when we're not feeling so good, or we're feeling a bit overwhelmed, to believe that, number one, that bad mood dictates reality. How we feel is just how we feel. It doesn't mean that there's any external reality to it. It just, you know, it's like today it's been rainy, then it was sunny, then it was rainy again, now it's sunny again. Which is the weather today? Well, the truth is all of them. So don't go outside when it rains. And when you're feeling down, don't start making decisions about your life, right? This is just my personal take on it. Again, this isn't Stephen Covey. The second thing I would say is, if you are trying to run some kind of time management or task management system where you have to get 15 million things done or feel your day is a waste of time, then you need to really, really rethink, because I would argue one or two mission critical actions taken per day or even per week will drive things forward. I have some weeks where I'm grossly unproductive, frankly, but I still manage to move business forward because the things that I do get done are effective. And I'm not suggesting that you have entire days that are ineffective, but that is, if you're feeling overwhelmed, it's because you're trying to be perfectionist and do everything perfectly, and you're trying to do everything, instead of which do the right things and do the right things well enough. Good or excellent is excellent, but you might as well start with good enough. Right. And another quote springs to mind from an old business coach of mine, Dan Bradbury, who doubtless got it from somewhere else. The imperfect action beats perfect inaction every time. So if you're suffering from paralysis from just sort of perfectionism, then I would urge you to park that and just do one thing today that is going to move you forward, whether it be with your Amazon business or whatever other areas of your life. So coming back to quadrant two, this is the non-urgent but important stuff. Quadrant two is the heart of effective personal management. It deals with things that aren't urgent but are important. It deals with things like building relationships, writing a personal mission statement, long-range planning, exercise, preventative maintenance, and preparation. All the things we know we need to do, but somehow seldom get around to doing because they aren't urgent. To paraphrase Peter Drucker, effective people are not problem-minded, they're opportunity-minded. They feed opportunities and start problems. They think preventatively. Before we go too much further, let me just reflect on this. Building relationships, absolutely critical. My experience of success in business has been that relationships are right at the heart of it. They're not an extra. Even in a product-based business, you might think it's all about the product, but it isn't really. I mean, the relationship between your product and the audience and a relationship you have with a supplier, for example, are absolutely critical. Now, the relationship with the supplier is based on volume. So there is a sort of chicken and egg thing here. You want to get a great relationship with a Chinese supplier. According to Ash Monger, who I was talking of recently, of IMEX Sourcing, who I'm interviewing for the 10K Collective podcast, the new podcast for advanced sellers, was saying to me, look, basically, it's quite simple. If you want a great relationship with your Chinese seller, you need to just buy a lot of product from them, right? But it's chicken and egg, isn't it? Because if you have a reasonably decent working relationship to start with, you can get quality products out there because you understand how to communicate about problems, how to solve them. If you get good products out there, you get a good relationship with your customers. And then, of course, it starts a positive cycle. So relationships are right up there for me. Preventative maintenance and preparation, also very important. Preparation for a great launch, for example, even if you're just starting out with your first ever product. A lot of people just put something on their Amazon, just wait for a week or two. It does badly. And then sometimes I'm lucky enough that they get in touch with me to help them relaunch their product. And at that point, I can say, well, okay, let's do some damage limitation. But much better to approach somebody before you launch your product, or even before you source it, and make sure A, the product you're sourcing is going to sell, or there's a decent probability of it, and B, you have a plan in place for launch. You'll do way better. A bit of planning will massively increase performance. Or there's that famous 5 P's or the 6 P's of the British Army, PPPPPP, which is prior preparation prevents poor performance. You can imagine the extra P for yourself, what it stands for. So the other thing to say is effective people are not problem-minded, they're opportunity-minded. That sounds like sort of somebody you'd love to hate, doesn't it? Oh, these opportunity-minded people. Guess what? That's not a different species. That's a decision. Some people are naturally more opportunity-minded. For the rest of us, myself included, I was trained as a classical musician. They're very perfectionist. They're very into solving problems. So you have to retrain your brain to some extent to try and see opportunities rather than just problems. And that's just a habit that you can work on. I promise you, it gets better with practice. Again, being around the right people, having the right peer group is critical for that. If you are surrounded by employees who are trained just to solve problems but not really look for opportunities and aren't free to pursue them if they see them indeed, then you need to get a new peer group. I'm not saying junk all your old friends, but I mean, you need to at least hang around with people with the right mentality enough that some of it rubs off on you. Hey there, this is Michael, and saying thank you for listening to the Amazing FBA episode you just listened to. Just want to mention that I mentioned at the top of the show our sister podcast, the 10K Collective e-commerce podcast, which is for 6, 7, and 8-figure sellers on Amazon. Specifically, that's who we're geared to. I'm sure that people doing bigger numbers will still have a lot of things to learn from it.
and people doing smaller numbers, sure, but it's not going to be immediately actionable for you. So if that is you, keep listening to the Amazing FBA podcast. But if you're 6, 7, or 8 figures on Amazon or e-commerce, I really think you should check it out. So I just want to give you a flavor of what's coming up, or rather just a bit of a list. Not deeply exciting as podcasts go, but I just wanted to, if you're just checking it out, know whether it's for you and what sort of topics we cover. Here's what's coming up. So first of all, an interview with our own Ashley Pierce from the 10K Collective Mastermind, who is talking about his last year in e-commerce, where he went from $750,000 in 2018 in turnover to a run rate this year of $1.25 million. So that's from scratch in 3 years. Super smart man, and he had a lot of the right skills going in. And let's be clear about that. But he didn't have tons of capital, just the conventional amount. So I still think that's an incredible result. And also, he's a really nice guy and a very, very clear-minded and feet-on-the-ground business thinker. So there's so much value. If nothing else, check that out. Really cannot urge you enough. I mean, these guys that have been in the Mastermind for nearly 2 years now have just honed their game to the nth degree. I've never heard quality discussion like I hear in there. And I don't say that because it's about me. It's not about me. I'm just privileged to work with some super smart and great people. So do check it out. Other things coming up then, lots and lots of industry expert interviews. Here's a flavour. And honestly, this is about half the list of people who've agreed to come on for an interview. So several of these are already recorded. So with Ryan Shaffett from Xcube Manufacturing, we are going to be talking about custom manufacturing in China. He's been out there about 18 years. And custom manufacturing, I can't emphasise enough how much that is the future. If you're still just purely private labelling stuff, it's going to get harder and harder to make a profit with that business model. I mean, I think it's got a year or two left in it, but sooner or later you need to get onto custom manufacturing. So this is a hyper critical skill set that you should be learning, I believe, to future proof your business. Second is funding, which is another massive topic, how to fund growth, because any scaling business, as Vern Harnish says, growth sucks cash. This is the law of gravity of scaling. Therefore, we've got to look into raising capital, and one way is debt. And Bruce Mack is going to talk to us about that. Aaron O'Sullivan is coming on from Systems Culture Impact to talk about outsourcing and company culture. And again, if you're scaling up a business, you're going to have a very painful time if you keep trying to do it yourself. Even if you've hit, say, $1 million a year equivalent, which I know some people have without a VA, guess what? You're not going to get to 2 million without a VA or basically a proper team on board. So that's something that's definitely a big barrier to entry. And also, to put it on its head, something that will add to your comfort and enjoyment of your business if you go with it. So that's a few things that we got in depth, just in a bit more superficial detail. Chris Shipfling of Providium with Jason Somerville is going to be talking about selling your FBA business, and they have a private equity take on that from the Wall Street side. So really fascinating angle on that. FBA reimbursements with Ben Chambers. Amazon often owes about $50,000 to $100,000 for any serious seller at some points in the year. How do you get your hands on that? It's just a fantastic source of cash, apart from anything else. So Amazon's got your cash. If you can get it out of the system, guess what? That's fantastically healthy for your business. Ash Munger's talking about quality control from China. He's got an incredibly detailed system for doing that. He's been out in China running IMEX sourcing for 9 years now, so he seriously knows his business backwards and sideways and in detail. Connor Gillivan's going to talk about the quick outsourcing system that FreeUp presents and how to outsource quickly and easily. Paulina Masson came on this morning. We talked about pricing, which is a very underrated and very important thing for driving profits. Will Churnland's coming back on, and we're going to talk about evaluating the competition from a real sort of standpoint of somebody who's not just looking at the numbers, although Will is super smart with numbers, but from the point of view of the overall competitive landscape. Really, as ever, Will's a brilliant Amazon thinker, always worth hearing. Kevin King's coming back on. Not even sure what we're going to be talking about yet with Kevin, but you know what? He's always a super smart guy when it comes to the marketing side, so I'm sure we have lots to learn from him. What else we got coming up? Amazon account suspension with Joshua Price, launching to overseas markets with John Cant, PPC advertising and profit margins with Mike Zagare of PPC Entourage, What else? Chris Rawlings is coming back from Judo Launch. Presumably, we'll be talking about Launch. Alex Oxford is coming on to talk about sales tax. He is super smart at explaining this stuff in very simple terms, but yet dealing with all the details as well. Alex is absolutely a critical person to listen to if you sell in the USA. Kostas Anastasiadis is coming back to talk about short-term funding. Brad Moss is coming back, who used to run Seller Central, so he's a super sharp guy as well. China Sourcing with Manuel Bekvar. Law for Amazon Sellers with Paul Ruffelson. Augustus Kligas is coming back on to talk about various different topics. John Cavendish talk about translations. Paul Harvey to talk about chatbots. Brian Johnson talk about PPC. Greg Mercer to talk about product research. Nadine Eich to talk about Germany and customer service in Germany. And probably going to get my old accountant Penny Lowe back to talk about bookkeeping basics. Whew. We have, as you can tell, an incredible amount of really practical, useful content coming up, a lot of which is already recorded and is definitely coming out over the next few weeks. So get yourself over there, folks. It's just a place you need to be. This is not just a bunch of let's fill the airways with the latest kind of hack that's going to die in 2 months. I'm taking care to really focus on content that is as evergreen as possible. Why? Because then you listen once and implement over multiple years, or at least months, and then you get the payoff over time, so you get better return on your listening time, if you like. And I think that's a really important metric. Return on listening for me is something I aim to give you in spades. So get yourself over there. 10K Collective is the thing you need to look for. 10K Collective e-commerce podcast, to give it the full title. You can look on iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts apps, or Stitcher. We should be on Spotify any minute now, and we're just waiting to get ourselves on Google Play and Google Podcasts. So it will be more and more effective. If you can't find it on your listening device, your preferred device, then just go to the website and you can listen directly there. 10kcollective.com. That's 10k, 10k for kilo. Collective is collective.com. That's 10kcollective.com. Thanks so much for listening to such a very, very lengthy post-roll pitch, if you like. I'm not actually selling anything, so it's not a pitch in any strict sense. It's free and it always will be. Of course, we will mention paid services from time to time, but I believe in giving like 95%, 99% value and a little pitch at the end. So it's not going to be a pitch fest. We are just aiming to build massive goodwill and getting ourselves out there and known. And of course, we hope to attract some wonderful people to our masterminds, and if people can use the services that some of our experts provide, so much the better. But really, that's our main thrust, is to get ourselves out there and build goodwill. So you know more than you're ever going to need to know in life about this podcast. Get yourself over there and listen. Stop listening to Amazing FBA. What are you still doing here? I'm going to go and have a cup of tea. I suggest you go and do the same, and I'll speak to you in the next show.